Hello, 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 and welcome to Unique Leaders Live. I'm Megan DiMartino, and it is Friday, the 8th of January. And if I did not have the opportunity to say Happy New Year to you last week when I was with the one and only Greg Reed, author, co-author of 3 Feet from Gold, I just want to say again, Happy and Blessed New Year. And we here at Unique Leaders Live have so many amazing guests in line for you to glean information from. Unique Leaders started during the early days of this challenging year. And I started I had been doing lives for many years, but I started interviewing, so to speak, some people that I knew locally that had interesting businesses. And it was an interesting phenomenon that it just so resonated with people. And what I did, and really it was about them. It wasn't about any strategic questions. It was just about them. And so I realized that the success of an individual is in their story. And that is what Unique Leaders Live is about. It is now a podcast. And so go on to iTunes and all of the other platforms, and you will see all of our interviews on there. Shortly after they, are finished here live. But regardless, you can follow them on my personal Facebook page, on my business Facebook page, where you might be coming into right now. But these will be there for you to watch, and also on YouTube, because you want to go back and listen to these folks, because amazing information is gleaned from this and disseminated from them. Today, I have the great pleasure of being with Emmy Kirshner. Emmy and I met about 3-4 months ago when I was interviewed on her podcast, which is called The Tribe of Leaders. And Emmy is just an amazing businesswoman. She has had great success in the business world, and she is now using that success in sharing as an executive business coach and as a podcast that is reaching many, many people, but also, again, on YouTube. And she does have a Facebook page that you can join that she'll share about as well. But without further ado, I would like you to meet my guest, Emmy Kirshner. Hello, Miss Emmy.
Hey, how are you? I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so blessed to have you, and also to have met you and to have you in my life, and that we can network and continue on. And that's, folks, what this is all about. Is it not, Emmy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I love is, I'm here in Philly and you're right outside of Austin. And despite the craziness that's been going on, we can still connect with each other and build relationships and help each other grow each other's businesses
exactly.
From afar. And, even though we haven't met in person.
Yet. I was just going to say yet, because as you know, I have family in the Northeast. So even if I didn't, we will be meeting soon. So Unique Leaders, as I shared in the introduction, is about you. It's all about you. But your life is, and the story of your life is what leads to your success of today. So with that, Emmy, I'd like to go back to young Emmy. Mm-hmm. And I just want to share this caveat that I so enjoy these shows personally because I know the general of a person. And many people that I do interview, I know or have talked to, but maybe not know personally. So it's just great fun and interest to learn about you. So let's go back to young Emmy. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in a number of different places, but I was born in Grafton, Massachusetts, which is a small town that's right outside of Worcester, probably like an hour outside of Boston, like west of Boston. Mm-hmm. And I think I was on second grade when we moved to Westboro, which is just a couple of towns over. And like my vision of myself, when I think of myself as being like little, is when I was like 5 and I had, braided or pigtail braids with, overalls and, like shiny red rain boots helping my dad wash a car. Like I have, it's such a clear vision of that. and being a little mischievous and and silly with it.
Red rain boots indicate a little mischief. Yes.
Yeah. Right. So, and being vivacious and sparkly and, you know, really enjoying playing. And, it's, I think some of the things that I love seeing in little girls now is that loudness and their ability to like innately take on the world. Mm-hmm. And I think I lost that at a certain point. I don't know what the actual, age was or anything, but where I became more quiet, like the general school of thought was, girls should be seen and not heard, and you should sit quietly at the table and, not speak until be spoken to, and all of those things that I think are slowly, I hope slowly, are kind of being eradicated, where women can find their voice. Mm-hmm. And be recognized for the value that we have. But mm-hmm. I remember being more in, later elementary school and being very shy, and really quiet and hesitant to raise my hand, etc. So very, a huge shift really in my personality as a small person.
And you remember that. You it resonates in your spirit of memory. Yes. And
yeah,
I was going to say, yeah. You were probably though a good student, and that factored into it.
I was an okay student. one of the problems I had was I tend to understand concepts really quickly, and my teachers acknowledged this too. And then I would tune out and miss like the next three concepts. So, and I wasn't super disciplined either in doing homework. So, like, I got the information, but I wasn't great at testing or reliable with homework either. So I was okay. I would make a great student now as an adult.
Yes, it's very apparent that you're very diligent on what in and on what you do. So you stayed in the Massachusetts area?
Yeah, until about seventh grade. And then we moved to Reston, Virginia, which is right outside of DC, which was like culture shock and totally different. It was the first time that I understood some of the like different pockets of the country. Mm-hmm. And the education was different from the standpoint of what they were focused on. And it was really cool because it opened my eyes up. Like at that time, we weren't celebrating Black History Month in Massachusetts, or at least not in a place that I was aware of it. So when February came around and we were in Virginia and that was a big thing, I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like I didn't, just wasn't in my consciousness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I started to see just different thoughts and different theories in how to educate. And I also, when we moved a couple of other times, several years later, I also got to see where the gaps are in education, because I read Call of the Wild like three times in three different moves, but I've never had a geography course. So those types of things was really interesting for me, particularly looking backwards. But those gaps have been something that have really moved me forward as I'm growing my business, because I'm always looking for, well, where can I improve?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. We're all students always.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Sponging, absorbing in. So where did you go to high school and the latter part of your education?
I went to two high schools in Virginia, and then my parents, and I still have no idea what their decision-making process was in this, but we ended up moving. And I know why my dad shifted jobs. So like that was the reason why we moved, but why they chose when he was working in Massachusetts to move to rural New Hampshire, coming from being like, half an hour outside of DC. I have no idea. My dad's a big joker, and he was like, oh, we're going to move half a mile past the pig farm. And my sister and I, we didn't believe him until it was that late night that I'm driving the second car up as we're moving up and waiting for the moving truck and everything. My sister's in the car, and we're like, oh, there is actually a pig farm.
So you went, just to be clear, you went from Virginia, you went to high school, then to and finished in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Rural New Hampshire. Wow.
Yeah. And third high school was New Hampshire. So I had, I had very different experiences again. And again, it was interesting where the, you know, people were focused in what they wanted to teach people, mm-hmm. And the way that they were teaching, because I ended up having, you know, U.S. history again, because it was the requirement for seniors in New Hampshire, where I'd already spent like a year and a half or 2 years in my other school districts learning the same thing. So I know a lot about the Revolutionary War, which I can still remember some of it.
Yes.
But yeah, it was really, I was kind of resigned, I think, when we got to New Hampshire, because I was just like, whatever, there's nothing I can do about this. Right. But, you know, find the silver linings in all of it. And there's, amazing beauty. And we were kind of in the woods and it was quiet, which was great. But I am a little bit more of a city girl. So
But it also, for our viewers and our guests, it really is emblematic of your resiliency, because you had to evolve during all of those moves and changes.
Mm-hmm.
You learned how to adapt and to focus on, hopefully by this point, what might have been resonating within you.
Yes, absolutely. And I got really good at taking things that, and I still do this, that weren't working for me, and changing them or shifting them to really meet me where I was at, so that I could then move forward. And you know, simple things like in my junior year in the second high school in Virginia, like chemistry was not my thing. Like I just, you might as well have been like, you know, talking to me and I was the wall, because it just wasn't absorbing. Mm-hmm. So I sought tutoring from my chemistry teacher. Mm-hmm. And I went from an F to an A in the next quarter. So, you know, I made those things work and I adjusted things so that I could succeed. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really fun part of life for me.
I had the same experience personally. You know, the arts always resonated, but algebra and chemistry, not so much. And so I did have to do what you just did. And I thought back to that, Emmy, and I realized two things from it, is that you have your strong suit,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, stay with it. And the other is that when you need help, get help.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think being unafraid to ask has been one of the recurring themes in the resiliency piece for me, mm-hmm. where, you know, I even in college, I decided to add marketing as a minor in my junior year. So I had to go back and take some freshman level courses.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was really struggling with the maturity level of the freshmen. So I talked to my teacher and like, can I do a different project or a separate project in addition to potentially just going to class once a week or twice a week instead of, I don't remember if it was, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but could I go to class less and do something else? And he was like, I'll do even better than that. I will take you out of the class and you're going to do this semester long project. And you'll meet with me weekly and we're going to build on this. And I never thought about it from the standpoint of being bold or resourceful or anything else. I was just like, I got to figure out how to not feel like I'm going to smack somebody and, you know, and get the information. Because I wanted the information. I just needed to formulate the unique way that was going to work for me so that I could be successful.
But that's also saying, you know, with your maturity, with your growing maturity in your year academia, going mm-hmm. back then to that, they hadn't had that process yet. And you on some level recognize that. But you also asked for what you needed.
Yes.
You were not afraid to ask for what you needed. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't even occur to me to be afraid at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's been other times and other things that I've totally overthought and not asked, but there's so many places as well where I just boldly go into the unknown and I'm like, we're going to make this happen. So let's figure it out, people.
Figure it out. Yes.
Yeah.
And you said that, you minored in marketing, but what did you major in?
It was business administration.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And where was that? Where did you go to college?
It was at Roger Williams University, which is in Bristol, Rhode Island. I did not have a clear path of what I wanted to do at all during high school. So it was kind of my decisions, one, go there and major in business, was more a function of, I don't know what to do and I can use this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's useful. I had a really strong interest in architecture, had taken architecture classes in high school and loved that, but the math, and this was before like CAD and so now I'm dating myself, right? So we were still doing drawings by hand with pencils and rulers. And one of my unique gifts is that I cannot draw a straight line even with a ruler. Mm-hmm. And I was getting marked down on like insignificant little deviations and straight lineness, which is again driving me nuts. And like in the, it still looks like a straight line, but you're measuring this infinitesimal amount. And I just was like, this is not my thing. Like, if I'm going to be, you know, judged based on that and not the creativity and not the what I'm actually giving and accomplishing, then it's not working for me. And some of it, I think, was a lack of discipline just overall. But I picked business and it's been pretty useful so far.
Exactly. But you also recognized, like you said, that it was the creativity that was drawing you to it, no pun intended drawing, but drawing you to it.
Right.
Was not that that such anal line and being perfect, that was not resonating with your spirit. And so, and that's also I feel a tremendous thing for our guests to hear, because it's about understanding what makes your heart sing, to get that clarity to continue on with what you're currently doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, for me and everything is, you know, what's the end goal and the end result? Mm-hmm. Like, there's always going to be little nuances that are less than what you want, and you can't focus on those. Mm-hmm. So I am big picture. And I do, I want to look at the progress, and that's what I want to measure, as opposed to staying into some little detail that's really not contributing to the overall result.
To have that vision and that goal, yes, and then the progress in between. So after college, where did you go?
After college, I was dating who's now my ex-husband. He was in the Marines and had enrolled in flight school. So I moved to Pensacola with him while he was in flight school, which again, culture shock. It was the first time I'd been called a damn Yankee. I ended up working for an engineering firm as an admin, essentially executive assistant. And it was the first time that I met people who, adults who couldn't read or write. And because they had the engineering firm essentially hired people for labor, or some of it was, skilled work. But it was based on project and based on jobs. So they kind of hired and laid off the same group of people over and over again, depending on what their jobs were that were coming in. And people would come in and bring somebody to fill out the application that they had, because again, dating self, but it was all paper-based. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I didn't realize that that was, at 23, I didn't realize that was even a thing. Like, that I just presumed everybody could read and write, and it really opened my eyes to what privilege I had and what a lot of it's experienced. And it gave me an immense amount of gratitude for being able to really just shift and change and mold my future into what I want and you know, continue to grow, et cetera. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. It's an amazing, rich experience at 23 to have that aha moment that so no matter what challenges of moving so many times and the dynamics of, because there were things that were challenging about that for sure, but that gratitude of understanding you had many blessings in the middle of all of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's moving around like that was really difficult. But it also gave me the ability to kind of be plopped into anywhere and be uncomfortable with the newness and not having a routine and still be able to kind of figure that out and find appreciation in the things that are really different.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I go seeking that when I'm in different places back when we used to get to travel a little bit more.
Yes. But it's that in our spirits, that adventure, seeking out that, looking to look into the experience, whatever that might be. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So my ex-husband actually got sent on a Mediterranean cruise. So he was over in the Mediterranean for 6 months. So I ended up moving back with my parents to New Hampshire. We had a Dalmatian at the time, so he came with, which my parents were less than enthusiastic about. Because most Dalmatians are like 50 or 60 pounds, ours is 90. Oh, and like super fit, so not, you know, slow. Like 5 miles of running, like straight running, did not tire this dog out. And he was like less than a year when I moved back. And I had a number of different jobs. It was, you know, kind of the like mid 90s at that point, and the economy wasn't fantastic. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I'd been on a gajillion interviews. I finally landed in a credit union association where I was doing event planning and conference management and marketing communications, and then switched over to the insurance side and did sales and marketing too. So it was like the moving around. I've done and had experience with a number of different industries. And it's been really cool because it's contributed obviously to what I do now, but just given me a depth and breadth of what works in different industries and how I can apply that to other places too.
Wow. Yes, I can see that. Meaning, so were you there a long time with this company?
I think I was there for 3 or 4 years.
So a while.
It was a great place to really play around with a lot of different things and be exposed to a lot of different areas. And I loved it. And the reason why I left was I had my oldest son, Brian. I knew I had wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and didn't want to have to put my kid in daycare, which is fine for anybody who chooses that. Like, that's great. It's just that this is what I had wanted and was my goal. That did not last long, but having kids changed everything dramatically for me. Mm-hmm. So it was, yeah.
Well,
and Brian did not sleep.
Yeah.
At all.
Exactly. I mean, it's a major decision to have children and but like you said, sometimes you're not able to have that traditional structure, and it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we planned for it, and it was really funny too, because I initially, when my ex-husband and I got married, I have been like, I don't know that I want kids. You have to be okay with that. Like, we had a big conversation with that. And then it was like one day I'm like, all right, we're going to have a baby now. Like, those hormones just kicked in, like really powerfully. And he was like, what happened to, I don't think that I want to have kids. I'm like, we're done with that. Moving on. Mm-hmm. Child now. Mm-hmm. And about 11 months later, I had Brian.
Now, was your husband still in the military at that time?
He had left by that point and been, I think, a year or so out. He completed his Mediterranean cruise. I think he had a couple more months to do before his time was up. And then he had gotten a job for in Massachusetts for a company that was doing I have to think about what it was. He did customer support, but it was like the beginnings of like digital communications from the standpoint of audio and video conferencing.
So what brought you, when did you, and what brought you to Pennsylvania, to the Philadelphia area?
Yeah, so it was 2001. So it was right after the bubble burst. I just had Matthew, my second son, and he had was now working for a startup. We were living in Maynard, Massachusetts, had just bought our first house. And he got laid off. Like he was one of the, third or fourth rounds of layoffs after the bubble burst and with the whole e-com thing. And he was out of work for 18 months. And that was really the catalyst for me. Well, there are two parts. It was the catalyst for me for starting my own businesses. And the first one was that Brian, I think it was a year before he got laid off, had digestive issues as a baby. We had transitioned him. I was nursing and he was having a little bit of formula, but transitioned him to milk. And he started just like having constant diarrhea, not to be too much, too much info, but it was unpleasant. And we'd taken him to all these doctors and he'd had all these tests and he'd been to the specialist. And the last gastroenterologist that we saw for him was like, we have no idea. Like nothing comes back irregular. Clearly he has a problem. Try giving him some olive oil so that he slows down his digestion. And I was like 27, 28 at the time. So this is like first kid, I have no clue what I'm doing, kid's not healthy. And I'm like, I am so not taking that for an answer. So I started researching and it was kind of funny too, because it was at the time that that seventh generation, at least for me, had started really advertising prevalently about toxins. And I was also starting to connect with some of the local farms and more organic stuff. And I started reading about nutrition, and I essentially over the next 18 months, healed Brian's gut so that he's fine today, can eat whatever. But when your kid's 13, 15 months old, they're not telling you, oh, hey, those grapes that you fed me? No, please don't do that. So there's a lot of trial and error. So there was that piece. And then my ex-husband got laid off and we had like 6 weeks of unemployment. So it wasn't like, 2008 or even now where they kept extending things. And the mortgage had to be paid. So I started catering and I worked for a company then. And it was so amazing because I was teaching myself to cook, healing Brian's gut, doing these, amazing events. And I had like fortune to work for this catering company that did really high-end events. So I got to take some of my experience from the trade association where I was doing conference planning, et cetera, and I moved up the ranks really quickly in the catering company, both from the standpoint of cooking and, how to have and manage a corporate party for 1,000 people all at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. And what I would do is I would work Friday night, I would do a shift. I would try to do a double shift on Saturday. So I'd start at like 8 a.m. and get home at midnight. And then I'd have Sunday off, and then I'd do whatever, whatever jobs that they had available during the week that were smaller. So it was a lot of fun, but I don't think I could do it now.
It's a rigorous. It's like any service type of business. It's very rigorous. Yes.
Yeah.
Like trade shows. I did more trade shows than any human being should have ever done trade shows.
Yeah.
But they were great and I learned and grew, but I physically could not do that now. I mean,
right. Yeah.
Do what I did. It's rigorous.
And that experience led me to personal chefing and starting my own catering company.
Wow. So, that.
Yeah. So my ex-husband finally got the job, just to circle back to your question, finally got a job here in Philadelphia. So he started working. I sold the house up in Massachusetts, moved the two kids down. When we lived, we moved out into Downingtown, PA, which is like an hour outside of Philadelphia, and started catering again. That's where I started the personal chef business, and just kind of kept chugging along and juggling, kids. And he was in another startup, so he was working a ton of hours, and a huge house and too much land, and so glad that I don't have an acre anymore. And
no, because you live in the city, which is great.
Yeah. Yes. So it's been interesting. Like, it's, you know, I always say when people ask, like, my path has been very windy. Like, it's not, there hasn't been this straight, oh, well, that totally makes sense on how she got from A to B. There's been a lot of diversions, etc.
But that is everyone. I mean, As I said, I love listening to all your stories because there's a similarity. There's a thread through them all, which is from my observation and on my own personal journey, is that there are many, as you said, you know, winding roads, but it's also that resiliency, that curiosity and that resiliency. And creativity often is a piece of it too, but creativity and that resiliency, but that desire to continue on and explore. And it's whatever field it is, there's a similarity, there's a thread through them, you know, that, and the desire to give back, to help people, meaning as the journey goes on.
Yeah.
It goes.
Yeah, and that's really foundational for me in everything that I've done. Is I want to be able to feel better, people to feel better. Mm-hmm. And not just from a health and wellness standpoint, obviously, but just to have a great life, right? The Dalai Lama is quoted as saying, you know, the point of life is happiness. And it's so easy to hear that and then continue on in your day with the 6 billion things that you've got running through your head that you're trying to accomplish. And I think when you become very intentional and aware of, you know, that there should be a joy factor in a bulk of what you do. I'm not saying every moment is, you know, sunshine and roses, because it's not, but looking for the silver lining and where you can find positivity, even in the dark days, for me at least, is really where it's how I've gotten through everything.
Yeah. And it's a choice, you're saying. I mean, it is all a choice, because you can choose to have a pity party and go within. But when you are going out and sharing with others, it pulls you out of that challenge that you're dealing with, whatever that might be,
Yeah. I mean, when I was going through my divorce, it by no means was the most horrible divorce on the planet, but it was not pleasant, and you know, it wasn't good, and I didn't know it was going to happen. Like, I was concerned that my kids were going to be pulled in two different directions. I had to sell the house that we'd bought in Downingtown. I didn't know what I want. I had just started my catering business and it wasn't fully supporting me, and he had moved to New Jersey at this point, so I essentially had no support to manage that and my kids. My younger son had just been diagnosed with learning disabilities that were not, like, diagnosable. Like, we definitely know he has learning disabilities, but he doesn't fit into any of the categories, so we don't know how to create a program to help him. So we had to do, again, a lot of experimentation with that. And, like, my guiding point at that point was just that I knew I had to put one foot in front of the other, and that everything was going to work out. Like, I knew that light was there. I could see it at the end of the tunnel, and I just stayed hyper-focused on that.
That one step to the next step. Yes.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't going to be crappy for forever.
No, but if you had stopped, it would have been.
Like,
it would have been.
And not that there weren't moments where I didn't cry and sob and have breakdowns and feel miserable. Like, I did. I totally did. But I also picked myself up off the floor and I was like, all right, we got to get back at this and make, you know, these things happen. And I've got to be there for my kids and, you know, just continue on. I mean, I think it's easy to stay in that space of negativity where everything's awful and just make decisions from that. But I really refused to, and intentionally was like, all right, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And that was the mantra. And it was funny because my dad said to me, he's like, oh, you look really good. You know, I had a new outfit or whatever. And I'm like, the mantra is, if I look good, I feel good and everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. Like that was what I just said over and over. Mm-hmm. And that was important for me.
Now you, at this time, as you said, you had just started your catering business. It wasn't totally self-sustaining, but it was getting there. So, but you sold your home. So did you mm-hmm. stay in the downtown area, or what did you do at that moment?
Yeah, so I actually moved a couple towns over to Chester Springs, closed the catering business. I actually worked for Starbucks for a little bit because I needed time to just readjust, mm-hmm. like get settled, get out of survival mode. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, have health insurance, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Ended up with a marketing agency and I did project management. And kind of media management for, it was really a boutique marketing agency, but we worked with all aftermarket motorcycle products, which I knew absolutely nothing about. So I was in a new townhouse.
Those experiences and those tools that you put back in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, I'll figure it out. Like I know how to do project management, the same thing as managing an event, just different tasks. Nice. And like God bless my boss Rick Menapace, who I hope sees this, because he really allowed me to be in the business with him and take on whatever I wanted to take on.
Wow.
Which was super cool.
Right on.
And wow. Yeah, like I was doing, you know, media buys. I ended up working with on websites for and trade shows and all the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. That kind of came with the marketing and you know, being a part of whatever our customers needed. Mm-hmm. And I now know a lot more about motorcycle products.
It's important. But it's a business. I mean, and business is business. And you learned about that client, yes. But you also, I'm thinking back to your minor in marketing and how mm-hmm. you went to that professor and did that project, you know, I mean, all of these little pieces work back to everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I'm always looking for how can I solve the problem? You know, like, oh, this isn't working. So how can we get it to work?
My right? dear friend and mentor, Sharon Lecter,
yes.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and on and on, the Napoleon Hill and 3 Feet from Gold. But she says this all the time, Emmy, solve a problem, serve a need. It's all about mm-hmm. solving a problem and serving a need. And I think about that all the time, you know, from a foundational standpoint.
Yeah, because there's always a problem to be solved and there's always a need to be filled. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, plan A or B can work, but a lot of times the best thing is plan F, right? It's just creative thinking and how you can make all of that happen.
Yes. How many times I've gone to plan F. Yes.
Right. And I learned that with catering too, like the company that I worked for in Massachusetts, I mean, they had a plan and a process and a checklist for everything, mm-hmm. but stuff still happened. Mm-hmm. Like things happen, like, you know, food gets dropped on the floor. So how do you make it work? Because your guest can't know that you just dropped the whole tray of green beans.
Right. So, with a smile right? on your face.
Right. Yeah.
That you
like, they're there to have an amazing experience, not deal with, you know, our mess up, mm-hmm. exactly. whether it was purposeful or not. So it's that fast thinking. Mm-hmm.
That's that critical fast thinking that I think all also is another piece to us all, is that it helps. Again, you can develop that. I mean, that didn't happen just overnight either. That's why this Unique Leaders is so powerful, because it's helping our guests to see that it's these years of the thing about Brian's illness, meaning you weren't going to have this child dehydrate and not live. I mean, so mm-hmm. you had to have that critical thinking, even when the physicians were saying, we don't know.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't make up anything else, you know? And so you had to go within and figure that out. And, right. and as you said, heal that child's gut at 13 mm-hmm. months of age. Yes. I mean, so it's that critical, just moment to moment thinking through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So then yeah. Rick, you stayed with Rick and the marketing company for a while?
Yeah. So then it was like 2000. And this is kind of funny too, because it's 2009. So it was right after the financial crisis. My life was stabilized. I was dating somebody else who was living with me at the time. My kids were doing really well. And this is where the entrepreneur in me keeps showing up, because I'm like, I'm going to open a restaurant. And I'm a foodie. Like, I love food. And one of the things that had been really important for me is that I wanted people to understand and enjoy as much as I do that healthy food can actually taste good and be mm-hmm. fulfilling in a, like a, that satisfying, ooh, I'm eating mashed potatoes type of way. Mm-hmm. And I had found this really cool location. It was a 250-year-old house that was right by like the mall in our area. And that house was tied to the history of the area as well. So it'd be really cool to bring farm to table and local food, you know, and be in that location. So I wrote this huge business plan. I had my catering experience. I had like a restaurant manager that I wanted to bring on board who could fill in some of the gaps that I didn't have in just running a restaurant, et cetera. And I spent a year and a half pitching banks, bringing on investors, negotiating for this lease of this building. But the more I saw it, and the more I had my architect and the construction manager that I wanted to work with looking at it, was really like falling apart. They had not maintained it in any fashion. And I didn't have the financial backing to renovate a 250-year-old house, structurally speaking. Like, that wasn't my intention. It's not what I wanted. I didn't want to take on the responsibility. And the company that I was dealing with had no intention of doing that either. They really wanted and needed somebody to come in who could, you know, was much bigger than what my intention was. And I just walked away. Like, I was tired of banging my head up against the wall. And I went and spent another couple of months looking for other locations. And it just, like, I was done. Like, I had made miracles happen with that whole experience, even though it didn't come into fruition. And I just knew in my gut that, like, all right, it's time to put this to bed. And if you're supposed to do this, one, it's going to be a lot easier. And two, it'll show up at another time. So I was still working for the marketing agency at this point and trying to figure out what was next, because Rick, my boss, was also looking to retire. So I was helping him really navigate what that was going to look like. Mm-hmm. A girlfriend of mine had just finished her health coaching certificate. And she's like, Emmy, you've got to do this. Like, you already know half the stuff anyways, because of everything that you've dealt with, blah, blah, blah. And it'll be a great way for you to help people. That's your goal. I'm like, sure, that sounds like fun. So I investigated and it kind of lit me on fire. So I did that, got my health coaching certificate, helped Rick essentially close his business and develop an exit plan. And I was getting my business started as Rick closed his. That was over the period of like a year and a half, and health coached for a couple of years, only to find that the people that I was actually coaching, I was business coaching and not health coaching, which I had to figure out a couple of different ways. One, I woke up one morning and I was like, if I have to write another blog about the five foods you're supposed to eat, I'm going to throw up. Like, and I love healthy eating and I'm passionate about that, but I'm done with this piece of it. And then I started looking at, like, in that inquiry place too, of, well, how am I really serving my people? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what does that look like? And I started looking at it and I thought I was, like, if you had asked me without me actually looking at my clients, both past and present, I would have been like, oh, I work with stay-at-home moms and I help them with emotional eating, blah, blah, blah. That is not true. I was working with all entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And some of them were moms, yes. All of them were experiencing stress because their sales were not where they wanted to be and they were overwhelmed and exhausted. Mm-hmm. So doing a lot of stress management, which tied into the food piece, because they were compensating their stress with emotional eating, mm-hmm. whether they're not eating at all or you know, standing in front of the freezer with the tub of ice cream at 10 o'clock at night, spooning it in. And that really has led me to where I'm at now, where, you know, I help creative entrepreneurs break through whatever barrier they're at and take off that overworked admin hat so that they can be the unstoppable, extraordinary, visionary leader and CEO that they know that they can be.
I listened to your live the other day, as you know, because you saw me.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, we're two peas in a pod because, I mean, the essence, I mean, I, not to repeat the whole live, but it's about clarity. It's about finding clarity. And I mean, you spoke initially about that and from there, and you had that many other pieces to it. But that's why I also feel that I'm speaking now to our audience, is that to listen to Emmy's story, you hear how she came to where she is, but she didn't want to say back when she was 23, oh, I want to be a business coach. I mean, even though she had a degree in business administration, she had these life experiences in business, in marketing, and everything in between that has brought you to where you are today. And I truly encourage you to follow Emmy on her, you know, all of your social media platforms, because they're rich with information, but they're also so heartfelt, but they're also experiential as what you're sharing, you know, today. So I mentioned Sharon Lecter recently, or in this last piece of our conversation, and she and Greg Reed, co-author of 3 Feet from Gold. And I ask as we close today, because you are here where you are, and you are helping many, many people. And as we discussed early on, not just in Philadelphia, but all over the United States.
Right.
But I ask everyone of my, all of my guests, the same question. In 3 Feet from Gold, there is what they call the success formula. And it is your passion times talent. A passion plus talent times association times action plus faith equals success.
Right.
I'm not going to ask you all of those things, and you've touched on all of them. But what I am going to have you focus on or earmark for our guests is, what is your passion and what is your talent?
My passion. So many things that I think are kind of overlapping. It's always been about helping people. So that's I really, in a broad sense, what the passion is. For me right now, it's about helping people build more profitable, better, sustainable businesses so that they're able to bring themselves to their business, to their day, to their full, amazing, you know, level 10 life, from a high performance standpoint. So they feel great, and that creates the ripple effect that I really want to see in the world, where we're creating more sustainable communities and sustainable towns and cities, that not just from the standpoint of we're having amazing lives, but that we're in an environment that is, you know, benefiting us, and that is, you know, has wildlife, and this is where my little tree hugger, you know, comes out, where, you know, we're one with nature, whether you live in a city or not, that's still, you know, that's still possible. And we're eating foods that are healthy for us, and we have opportunities that benefit us, and we have connections that, you know, are bringing us together and not dividing us.
And that is, it is attainable. It is.
Yeah.
One step at a time. It really is. And many of the, again, I keep repeating the same thing, but if you back to the pig farm, meaning where you were exposed, you know, in the country and so forth. So all of our experiences lead to that, then meshing to have sustainability, and is integrative.
Absolutely.
In all. And that is what you're doing in your life, but also in your community.
Yeah.
So your talent?
My talent is that I'm able to get into a place with my clients where I can really understand where their gaps are, both from a mindset and leadership standpoint and from a system and process standpoint, and close those mm-hmm. so that they can have higher profits and work less. Mm-hmm.
It's excellent. Excellent. And you yeah. spoke about that the other day. So that's, again, I repeat, meaning with the structural information of how to.
Yeah.
But you have to be clear on the why. Why is that even happening? Yeah. And then the structural information of how to change that. Yes. And remedy it. Yes.
Yeah.
It's just, as I said, I am the great benefactor of these unique leaders. And sharing this time with you, Emmy, has been just a joy. And I know our guests as well, because they will go back to YouTube and they will go to podcasts of this. And of course, it'll be on my Facebook platforms and yours as well.
Yep.
And so they can revisit this and just really glean the information that you've shared today. Well, I truly thank you. So stay tuned in the green room and I'll be there in a minute. And really, Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time to be here with you.
We'll see you soon. Oh, I'll see you in a minute.
Yes.
Well, wow. What a special New Year's January 8th kickoff of Unique Leaders Live with Emmy Kirshner. And you will be so blessed by going to her Tribe of Leaders Facebook page, a friend Emmy on Facebook, but also her go to her group, because it really is full of very, very, not only practical, but very detailed information. Often people have groups and they have information, but it isn't where you can really apply it. It's just general quotes and things of that nature, which are good and somewhat helpful, but she is a practitioner. She goes in there and helps you accomplish. So I truly highly suggest that you do that. But I ask you from my heart to go to YouTube. We are and subscribe to this. We will put this in the text. We'll have a link to it. But we're trying to reach a goal, because we cannot proliferate this without reaching a certain goal with YouTube. So if you would go, and we'll put the link in, but my Megan DiMartino YouTube page, and subscribe to it. And that truly will help expand the platform of Unique Leaders Live throughout 2021 and reach people and really help people. Because next week we are going to have the one and only, I just mentioned her earlier, Sharon Lecter. She has a new book. She wants to share that with you, but also share her amazing story of her not only career, but life. And it is so inspirational, informational, educational, and you will be blessed by it. So as time goes on, these guests will be on the podcast as well as YouTube. And I just want you to be able to go and work out and listen to these folks as you're doing all of your daily round. So do go to Megan DiMartino YouTube page, which this is going to be on or already is on, and subscribe. But then also, I don't know if you're coming in on my personal page, Megan DiMartino, and that's great, but we're building a business page, which is the official Megan DiMartino. So do friend us over there, because we will slowly continue to build that with all of these platforms. And then like us, comment. That is also helpful to build this for you. Essentially, it is for you. So we will see you on Monday for Teach, Motivate, and Inspire. And then we will kick off the week and then finish it off with Ms. Sharon Lecter next Friday on Unique Leaders. Have a blessed weekend, and we'll see you Monday. Thank you.